simple methods helps people get to the point. And it frees them from the belief, the mistaken belief, that jargon is bad. Because it's not. Jargon's not bad at all. We need jargon to do our jobs well. So there's been a good networking effect from that. And of course, that's been concentrated in South Africa. But there have been connections with the Netherlands, where I am, with the States, with Australia, Singapore, and the UK. And adopting new habits, that takes time, which is one of the reasons I offer these follow-up sessions. Because without them, it's just, hi, I've come to South Africa, here's some stuff, bye, I'm heading back up to Europe. But who's it for? It's for individuals and companies that have deep expertise in an area. You mentioned finance and audit, engineering, software development. It's really good for tech.
Before we start this podcast, I've got one little favor to ask you. Can you please hit the subscribe button down below so we can help more people every single week? Thank you.
Welcome to the Right Place podcast, where we learn with you how to build connections that matter, relationships that last, and businesses that thrive. My name is Rudolf Rautenbach, and today I'm talking to Chris Fenning again. So Chris is the first guest that we ever interviewed twice on this podcast, and you'll soon find out why. Chris, great to chat to you again.
Rudolf, it feels like we were only talking a couple of hours ago.
We might have been.
Now, Chris, we were. It's a real pleasure to be back on the show.
Yeah, happy. Yes, I'm so glad to be able to say that I'm going to see you again one of these days. And you were here in February for the first minute tour that myself and John Watson arranged with you. And we met last year online for the first time, but it really feels like we've been, we know each other for so long. How have you been since you last came to South Africa, and what have you been up to?
Well, first of all, I just want to recap that event in February was absolutely incredible. And I can't believe it's been a year since you first reached out and said, hey, do you want to come to South Africa? And, and what an event that was. There were 19 events over 2 weeks, and you and John put on a phenomenal display of networking, fantastic events, delivering value for people, and you looked after me so well. So well, in fact, I left feeling like I'd got two brothers instead of just working in South Africa for a couple of weeks. I've never spent that much time with two people. We were like morning, from the moment we woke up to the moment we went to bed, we were all in each other's company. And it was fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. So really pleased that you reached out a year ago. The tour was amazing. And I'm looking forward to doing another week with you in a few weeks' time. But we'll talk about that in a few minutes, I'm sure. So since February, what have I been doing? I've been working with clients individually, working with some businesses, and you know me, writing some books. So I have one book which is close to being ready to go to the final stages of editing, and another book that is about halfway done and should come out in the middle of next year.
Maybe elaborate a little bit on the book since we are talking about it. You mentioned two. I remember from our conversations in the car and doing what we did in Feb that you already wrote out the skeleton, a bit of a framework for about 10 or so books. They've been ongoing. They've been in your mind for a while, and obviously you prioritize certain ones over the others. So give us a little bit of detail as to what we can expect, maybe in terms of topic, and then also a little bit about the timelines that's around that.
Yes. So the closest book to being done is currently called The Meeting Sweet Spot. And it's how to run meetings that people actually want to come to. And there are a lot of books already out there on meetings, but this one focuses on really the fundamental things that work in any meeting to set it up right, get people focused, create the output you need, and keep things on track. And what makes this book different, other than the fact it's short, and you know me, I like to write short books, this is the shortest one yet. And not only is it short, but it's packed full of pictures and images and diagrams, which take some, it's not the most exciting topic in the world. I will admit that meetings isn't the kind of, oh, yes, I need to get me some of that. But it is important So I've taken some of these concepts and turned them into simple but effective graphics and images that really help people see the impact of the decisions that we make, the small decisions about how we kick off a meeting, about those moments where we could redirect to the thing that we want, or we could go in a new direction. And so turning those into a graphic format not only works for visual learners, but it also brings a little bit of interest to, I have to confess, a fairly dry topic. So that's the first book, The Meeting Sweet Spot. And it's a work in progress title, but the more I say it, the more I like it. Nice. And that will come out in the first quarter of 2025. So sure. Still probably six months away. And the second book focuses on, it's for people who are experts in a topic, whether it's finance and audit, whether it's engineering, software development, but experts who need and want to communicate with non-experts. How do they get their message across? And the book helps people be concise, relevant, and convincing. And if those three sort of statements weren't enough to hook people, just imagine if you could communicate your message in a way that was relevant, relatable, simple, and jargon-free. And that is what readers of the book will get. Simple frameworks, methods, some good case studies and examples for how to turn any expertise and communicate it to a non-expert audience.
Nice. Yeah, I'm particularly looking forward to that book just because of the nature of my work with all the jargon we use. And sometimes you just miss the client or the people that you talk to completely. So I think that is something that all of us can learn to do better. But what I'm more excited about is that I saw a little bit about it in some of the workshops that we did in February as well. And I think the framework is so simple to apply, so user-friendly that it can actually assist you to just package whatever you want to say within this framework. And I think that is the value of just sitting back and grasping how you can talk differently but still get the same message that you thought you're getting across. You still get it across, but a lot more effective. And I think these frameworks obviously work well for that.
Yes. Oh, yeah, because you not only sat through, but participated in some of the workshops. So yes, you have experienced firsthand how simple these methods are. And that's partly how I write books. And a lot of people do this. They will teach a topic for a while and then turn it into a book, which is another asset for their business. And it's another way people can consume the content at a much lower rate than hiring me to come in and teach. And seeing real people apply the techniques and have those moments of, oh gosh, I can do this. And not only can I do this, I now have an example I'm going to use tomorrow when I talk to client, boss, stakeholder, whomever.
Yeah.
And so applying these really simple methods helps people get to the point, and it frees them from the belief, the mistaken belief, that jargon is bad. Because it's not. Jargon's not bad at all. We need jargon to do our jobs well. You work in a finance role. When you're talking to someone else in a finance role, speaking finance language makes sense. It makes your job faster, smoother. You both understand what each other is talking about. If you can get the words out there. But if you were talking to me, I wouldn't understand half of it. So you need to convert your expert language. That's what jargon is. It's expert language. Convert that into something that I would understand. So you go from expert language to common words, common language. And that's one of the things that a lot of us strive to do, but it's difficult. And the frameworks I teach people how to structure a message in a certain way so that by the end, it's automatically jargon-free. You don't have to try and be jargon-free. By doing these other things, you automatically get a message that is clear and concise and relevant and relatable.
Talking about workshops and things, you sprung a little bit of a surprise on myself and John at the beginning of the year by releasing a new book quite a bit into our conversations. And we obviously both read the first minute, and then came about this thing called 39 Ways to Make Training Stick. And now
Yes, the book I didn't expect to write.
Yeah, I thought it was quite well received. Both myself and John worked quite a bit in the training space over our careers, so we were able to set up some of these workshops. So I'm quite interested to see or to hear actually how this book's been performing. And you mentioned frameworks, and that book is actually 39 little frameworks, if you will, showing people what you can do to make sure that after the training took place, that you're actually in a position to feed learners or your students a little bit more information and ensure that they actually grasp whatever was taught there. So how's the book been performing, but also the workshops and the training around it? And do you still apply those principles yourself?
Yes, I do. I kind of have to now. Having written the book, I can't not apply some of these methods. And I say some because no one uses all 39 all the time. They're not all necessary. It would be too much. And so for anyone listening or watching who's not familiar with the book, this is what it looks like. It's 39 ways to make training stick. And it has very little to do with what happens in the training session. It's almost entirely about what happens after the training session, after trainees have left the room, and all that information starts pouring out of our ears and we just go back to our day jobs and forget. And it's what we can do as trainers to help remind, help reinforce, help prompt, help ensure that learning continues. And the value from that training session is really captured and provides value for a long time going forwards. So having written it, I absolutely have to use some of the methods. I tend to use the workbook, the follow-up session, and a reminder email sequence. So attendees at my workshops get a workbook that walks them through activities directly related to what was taught and to their jobs. So that's a good reinforcement. And then I almost always offer a live follow-up 4, 8, 12 weeks after the event, and in many cases, multiple follow-ups, to provide an opportunity for people to ask questions, to say, hey, that thing didn't work for me, and then we can unpack it and see if there's a better way for their particular situation, and do a little top-up training as well. It's been very helpful. It's certainly helping me stand out as a trainer compared to some of my peers who haven't adopted these things yet. And as a last thing, it's been good for my brand, because it got picked up by the Association of Talent Development's monthly magazine, and that's got a huge readership. It is sort of this in the States and Europe, it is quite a key association for training and development. And and I got a double page spread explaining one of the methods and how it helps, and giving away some templates and things. So there's definitely interest in it in the training community and with my clients as well.
Yeah, very interesting. I'm not professional at training at all, but I do a lot of smaller workshops and so on, and I found value in this as well, in that you almost remind people of what happened. And so it could also double down as a bit of extra marketing, and it could also be just reinforcing the issue. But the framework is such that you can use it for both.
Yes. Yeah, it keeps you top of mind. Those repeated touch points. So from a business development perspective, repeated touch points with the client, assuming they're good and people have found value and it's not more bad training, as long as it's a good experience, positive experience, then it's another touch point. It's another reminder that you're the person there giving more than that one and done training.
Yeah, for sure. So you mentioned that you are the first person to ever be on this podcast twice. And the reason for that is that you are coming back to South Africa end of October,
then
28th October to the 1st of November. I'm very excited about it. Obviously, Cape Town's losing out this time. It's a Pretoria tour.
It is. That's up the game.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about what brings this about. What are you going to come and do here? And obviously, if you are looking forward to it.
Am I looking forward to it? I wrote the answer down to this earlier. Yes, I'm definitely looking forward to coming back again. It'd be lovely to see you and the family. And of course, South Africa is a beautiful country, very diverse, but absolutely stunning. So really looking forward to coming back. And I just missed the winter, so I'll be there in time for spring and the beginning of summer, which is nice. And what's bringing me back? Well, as a result of the tour in February, some of the people who attended the events there have invited me back. And I'll be doing a couple of days with AfroCIE, which is a big audit, financial audit-based organization across Africa, and doing a couple of days with them, and then a number of other workshops and events that I believe you've been helping organize.
Yes. I should have asked this question of myself, rather. but you are the star of the show, so I hate to ask you. But yeah, just on that, I think the tour has been quite low profile in that it's not really open to a large portion of the public, purely because it's corporate that pays for their staff to attend this. So it's in-house type of training, which I think is a knock-on effect of what happened in Feb, just spilling over the to more functional, detailed type training for a bigger group within an organization. And I think it's quite exciting in that people are actually getting to a point where they want to change behavior, change culture across the entity and not necessarily only for two or three people that attended the sessions.
Yes. Yeah. And you mentioned sort of change and adopting new habits. That takes time, which is one of the reasons I offer these follow-up sessions, because without them, it's just, hi, I've come to South Africa. Here's some stuff. Bye. I'm heading back up to Europe. And then we forget. That's human nature. We go back into old habits. So working with organizations in the training session, but also afterwards, to find ways to really embed what was learned and support them. Find out if this stuff needs tweaking a bit to work for their particular situation. And that's one of the things I bring with me, is that long-term support and relationship, rather than just fly in, do my thing, and fly out again.
Sure. And then as part of the tour, the second tour, version two, the 1st of November, we are planning a bit of an open session specifically on this topic of jargon-free speech or relevant, relatable, jargon-free that we just discussed a little bit about. Remind us about who it's for specifically, who would get a lot of value out of that? And then secondly, how would this allow them to change behavior then for that business, for that entity going forward?
So who's it for? It's for individuals and companies that have deep expertise in an area. You mentioned finance and audit, engineering, software development. It's really good for tech and really good for finance. Now, I could say it's useful for everyone, and I say that with absolute confidence, but we're going to be really focusing on these sort of two expert areas, and pharmaceuticals as well, anywhere where there's a really deep expertise. And the benefit is anyone who turns up, whether it's an individual, whether it's a team that comes along, when they leave, they'll be able to do things like communicate their ideas to decision makers for approval. If someone works in a sales engineering or a technical sales role, they will be able to do better at selling. I'm not teaching selling in this, but the things that will be learned will help them talk about the technology in a way that the customer really relates to and really understands. And it's simple. We'll stop drowning people in detail. And it'll give everyone there the confidence that no matter how deep, how technical, how complex something is, they can confidently explain it to anybody without getting them confused with the details.
Chris, you know that on the Right Place podcast, we talk a lot about networking and relationship building and connecting with other people, giving value and the like of that. So how would you say the tour in February had an impact on your brand, on your reach? Was it positive? Was it far-reaching? Was it limited to South Africa? What was your take on what it did for you as Chris Fenning, the brand?
Well, what it did is it's still doing. Just this afternoon, before we got on this to chat, I got connected, someone on LinkedIn connected with me because there was a conversation between two of my friends, and they both suggested that this person, Ricardo, get in touch with me. And he goes, oh, yeah, I know Chris. And then someone else jumped in and went, yeah, I met him in South Africa at an event in Johannesburg. And so the connections between my network are still developing, and people who didn't know that we knew each other are now finding out that we do. So the effects are still ongoing, and I'm always intrigued and slightly amused by how the sort of, is it seven steps from Kevin Bacon is the phrase, that everybody is only seven people removed from Kevin Bacon, or pick some other famous person. And so there's still an ongoing impact. And the benefit of that is I can be introduced to someone and I'm not a complete stranger. They know, they either know me or they know of me or they know someone who will vouch for me. So there's been a good networking effect from that. And of course, that's been concentrated in South Africa, but there have been connections with the Netherlands, where I am, with the States, with Australia, Singapore, and the UK. So that network effect has gone beyond. And in terms of branding, we, gosh, you and John put in so much effort. I put in a bit of effort as well, but you and John put in so much effort to making that event, those series of events, really good. And the result was people who know me now think I'm famous in South Africa. And I don't think I am, but it, from an external perspective, from people looking at LinkedIn who were looking at the ads and seeing what was going on, the impression was this is like a really, really big tour and is making a big impact. And what's lovely about it is it's true. It did make an impact, but it didn't feel like we were superstars. It felt like we were just people getting on with sharing our expertise and helping others deliver better training, get to the point, communicate their expertise. And so for my brand, it's certainly lifted it and got lots of great photos and B-roll and things, which all speaker trainers value quite considerably.
That's interesting. I remember the tour being rather busy. It's been, it was hectic because we had to travel in between two or three sessions every day and so on. But every time we arrived, there was this hunger from the people. And secondly is, I thought to myself at some stage, we're gonna get tired of this message, because I heard it 10, 20 times. But in actual fact, I spoke to someone a week or two ago and I said to them, every session I learned something new. It's the same topic, but there's a different angle, there's different community, different people attending, different type of business. And the angle is just a little bit different to suit their needs. And every time I sat down, I learned something new. I wish I applied all of it, but I did learn.
Don't beat yourself up. I teach this stuff and I still catch myself not doing it every time. I say that not to diminish my value, but to give everyone else a little bit of hope that cut yourself some slack. It's okay if you don't get it perfectly every time. It's a journey.
Talking about networking, you're also on LinkedIn. You're quite active, myself and John as well. You're quite busy on LinkedIn. How do you see LinkedIn as a value-adding tool to what you do, writing first, but also your marketing angle, giving value to people through that platform?
LinkedIn is the most valuable networking tool that I use beyond going to somewhere and meeting a group of people, so events, conferences, and things. But the most consistent tool is LinkedIn. And it's a convenient way for people to have a light touch interaction. So if I'm putting out valuable content and it helps them, and they don't hit like or comment or anything, that's fine. If they're getting value from it, that's great. If I'm putting content out that's not valuable, I really hope someone would tell me so that I could stop and change tack. From a business development perspective, it helps keep you top of mind. I've had people come to me and say, oh, I meant to get in touch with you a year or so ago about something, but I just saw your post and it reminded me. So there's value in clients. And then in a very proactive way, I use LinkedIn as part of my sales process. I look at who's viewing my profile, who is interacting with my posts, who is connecting with me. And I'll do a personal welcome message to everyone who connects with me. It might take me a while if there's a big rush, but everyone gets a video message. And if they fit the profile of someone who I would work with, if they're a manager or a leader of a team, particularly in a technical environment, I'll invite them to a free webinar. And I will teach something they can then use to help their teams. And that becomes part of my sales process. And I say this very openly, if anyone's listening and thinking, oh, well, you haven't invited me, maybe I haven't got around to it yet. Or if you'd like to come along, get in touch. But it helps me find people who are interested in the problems that I help solve. So I'm not just reaching out into the dark to find clients. I'm getting in touch with people who we're already having a conversation. We've chatted in the comments. I've consumed some of their content. We've talked about a particular issue and expanded on it. So when we start having actual sales type conversations, it's not from a cold start. So very, very important tool for me. And I learn a lot from the people around me as well. I found some fantastic inspiration from other people, both in communications, career development, the things you and John put out, and more besides.
Good. So on the 8th of November, just after you return home, you're actually a speaker at TEDx Eindhoven. And it's always interesting to me. TEDx is this big global thing that's probably larger than most of us. But how did you get in there, firstly? And secondly, is what are you going to talk about? How has that experience been? And what do you perceive the value is to you just by participating?
Okay, so how did I get in? What am I talking about? And what is the value? How did I get in? I applied. They have a small number of open application seats. And you have to go through an application process, submit a video, submit what your talk topic is going to be. If you get selected, you come to a pitch event where you give really the first 3 minutes, 3-4 minutes of the talk. And you're trying to convince the judges and the audience that your idea is worth spreading and sharing, that it is valuable, and that you're capable as a speaker. Although that last one, the bar is lower because people can, we get 6 months to be trained and coached and so on for those who need and want it. So that's how I got in. I went to the pitch event and I was very fortunate to be selected. The topic, it's the first minute. It's the thing I'm known for. It's the simplest thing that we can all do to improve the clarity of our communication. And here's a line from the talk, which is every time we communicate, every message we send is an opportunity for clarity or confusion. And if you want clarity, it starts with the first minute. Oh. So I'll be doing a little bit about that, sharing some of my own communication mistakes from the last, few years, from my career. Some pretty big ones will come out in there as well to show how not to do it. And the experience has been not what I expected. I found it harder to prepare than any other event. Last week, I gave a talk to about 1,000 people at JP Morgan. No problem at all. Did a talk, did a workshop. Absolutely fine. And then I went to the practice session for this TEDx talk, and I got on the stage in front of 15 people, and I was nervous. I really felt dry mouth, like vibrating on the inside through the sort of excitement, nerves, adrenaline rush. And you ask me what it means. And I think it's because this does mean a lot to me. It's an opportunity to reach a bigger audience with something that will really help. And I've made it into a big thing in my head, which is what I've got to work on. Less on the speech. I've got the speech. That's fine. But I have to work on my preparedness so that Chris turns up and not, not somewhat nervous guy, so that the delivery is really good, and that makes it better for everyone who sees it. But 4 weeks to go, and I'm feeling good about the content, feeling great about the team, the event organizer doing a fantastic job, and I'm really, really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I can imagine. I attended the one in Pretoria last year, or beginning of this year might have been, and it's fantastic. The variety of topics and the absolute expertise in that room. Bits of strange ones, weird things in between, but some...
Oh, yeah, there's a range. There is a range, and Eindhoven will be the same. The range is good. Now, when I come to South Africa, I'm going to be... It's a great opportunity for me to practice. So some of the events where it's relevant, when I'm covering the first minute, that speech, I will give that talk if groups would like to hear it. So it's sort of a sneak peek. It's my practice and a preview before a week, 2 weeks before the main event. And the last bit you mentioned, so what do I think it would do for my brand? Well, maybe nothing. Some of the best content, the best delivered TEDx talks have a few thousand views on YouTube. On the opposite end of the scale, it launched Brené Brown and Simon Sinek. So that's a little lofty. I don't think I'll quite reach that, but who knows? The best thing I can do is deliver a really valuable, engaging experience for the people in the room And anything else that comes afterwards is going to be a bonus.
Yeah, it's a good way of looking at it. Chris, we always end off this conversations on the right place by asking the question, if you are currently in your right place, so what's your answer to that?
Yes, I absolutely am. It's taken me time to realize it, but I'm in the right place right now. And I've recently recognized that that place changes over time. So right now, my place involves going in a few minutes to go and pick up my daughter from school, working fewer hours in the day so that we can have that comfortable family time. And she's welcomed home from school in the afternoons. It means I can't do teaching or travel as much. But that's the right place for right now. In a few years, that'll change. But right now, yes, I am in the right place.
Yeah, very good answer. And I believe the same. I think the right place will shift as you grow as a human, as you grow in life and as things and circumstances change. But you have to almost be at peace with where you are. Although we are geared towards chasing things and growing and building always. But as long as you have that peace with where you are and what you're doing at the moment, then I think the rest of the stuff will fall into place. So, I do agree with that answer. Chris, it's been so much fun having you again. It's always nice chatting to you. I can't believe how fast time flies when we have a conversation.
Where did it go? Where did half a year go?
For sure. I'm looking forward to seeing you again, obviously, in person. If there are people that want to grab a bit of Chris while he's around in South Africa, you can reach out to me. We can have a chat. There's no open slots, no days open, unfortunately. But we will have that open session for paid people to come through. We can fill up a bit more people in that specific session. But we don't have open slots for further sessions, unfortunately. But we
on
can
this
always,
trip,
we always...
We don't have them on this trip. We could do what Very we did good. Last time, which is if there's interest, come along to the session on Friday. Send your people to the session on Friday. And when they find it valuable, we'll arrange another trip back.
100%. Yeah, that's the best way, and a very good interruption there. I agree with that, because then I get to see you again. And that works for me as well.
And I'll bring the family, and we'll make another trip of it.
Yeah, very good. And last thing on that is we are actually going outside of Gauteng. We're actually going to Mbombela, to Nelspruit, and Mpumalanga as well for a session. So it's all possible. We can do all of those type of things, and we will have another tour. I'm quite sure of that. But yeah, Chris, nice to have you on again. I think the value that you always give, and the conversations, the content that you give on LinkedIn as well is so simplistic but so relevant as well. And yeah, I do appreciate that. And yeah, may it all go well. Looking forward to see you on the 28th or just before that. And then good luck as well with your TEDx talk.
Thank you very much, Rudolf. I'm looking forward to it as well. See you in a few weeks.
Good. And thanks to everyone who's watching. You can like and subscribe, and then also follow Chris on LinkedIn. Thank you.